most Catholics in countries like ours. I've said this maybe by now seven or more times to you people. America is the most brainwashed nation in the world, and I mean it, most brainwashed. And one reason, because we don't even know it. We don't even know it. We're so brainwashed. So the Vatican II, my gosh, when somebody, the Vatican is built on Vatican II, some people were praying, Lord, spare us. And the only Vatican II they knew was the counterfeit, which was palmed off on the public. Top of page 15. As it follows, that would constitute the substantial newness of the Second Vatican Council in line with the legislative tradition of the Church, especially in regard to ecclesiology, constitutes likewise the newness of the new code. Now this is a whole world of development. And the Catechism of the Catholic Church, for the first time ever in 2,000 years, reflects not just doctrine per se, what we call correctly the deposit of faith. The Catechism of the Catholic Church also reflects the development of doctrine, the growth in our grasp and understanding here of the Church. And this is crucially important, and again to speak of the relationship of bishops to the Pope. That the bishops can, as we sadly well know, sound off, say things that are just openly in contradiction with what the Pope says. But as long as a bishop is kept in office, I repeat, the bishop is in authority and he is the bishop of that diocese. But then we've got to have some norms. And there's one thing that's new, because it's so crucially important. It is what Second Vatican makes clear, that we are to measure, weigh, balance whatever a bishop of any diocese, either teaches or orders, by what the Pope teaches or orders. If what the bishop says is confirmed with the Pope's teaching, then it's to be followed. If it isn't, pray for the bishop. But that does not mean that you're bound to follow his, either his teaching or his directives. Like one of the afternoons in here, front page of a Catholic paper, big English words. Humani Vitae does not teach infallible doctrine. Contraception is not infallible teaching, says His Excellency. His Excellency is wrong. W-R-O-N-G. Dead wrong. And we're going to even survive in our faith, not to say thrive and provide others, especially you parents with children. We've got to know our faith, learn it, and have access to the teachings of the Holy Father. I don't mean volumes, but on a regular basis, what the Pope teaches, to know what he says. Because there are so many voices that are teaching otherwise. Like, for example, to illustrate, without identifying the parish, penance before First Communion. In the years following Vatican II, there was rather widespread experimentation with the practice of delaying First Penance until after First Communion. But the Apostolic See repeatedly ordered that these experiments be halted. Period. Nevertheless, Canon 988 and 989, based on the discipline of the Council of Trent, require only those conscious of serious sin to confess before receiving communion. And this also applies to children receiving First Communion. No, period. No, exclamation mark. Dear Father, my God, dear Father, have mercy on the Catholic people who belong to your parish. Have mercy on them. Have mercy on them. Most people don't even know what those canons say. The Church's law could not be clearer. First confession before First Communion. And that is just, as you know, the tip of the iceberg. Except children don't go to confession before making the First Communion, as so many pastors now tell me. Not one, but many pastors. They insist that bride and groom go to confession before getting married. And many tell me they make their first confession before they marry. In parishes where the priest has enough faith left to insist. I repeat, we cannot be satisfied with commentary knowledge of our faith. We better know what the Church teaches. You can no longer coast as Catholics today. No more. You swept off your feet, along with the 8,000 priests in America who left the priesthood. They go on. Third paragraph on page 15. If, therefore, the Second Vatican Council has drawn both new and old from the treasury of tradition, and the new consists precisely in the elements which I have enumerated, then it is clear that the code should also reflect the same note of fidelity in newness and of newness in fidelity, and conform itself to this in its own subject matter, in its own particular manner of expression. In other words, the code of canon law is as timely as ever, and rather surprisingly, the Pope might have simply have let the new code go. There was a code of canon law in existence. Why write another one? Because there has been a general council of the Church. And, as we know, the code of canon law does not specifically identify each minute detail of the law, but rather sets down the basic principles that cover all the laws of the Roman Catholic Church. But I want to emphasize that. There has been such historic development of doctrine in the Catholic Church that the Code of Canon Law, to reflect that development of doctrine, must be known. And I would say it with emphasis, by you people belonging, as we say, to the laity. And that is not only, we would mainly say, to know your responsibility. We do have duties. And the Code of Canon Law spells out those duties. But also, hear it. The Code also spells out our rights. And the rights of the laity are spelled out in no uncertain terms in the Code of Canon Law. Know what your rights are. For example, to mention just two, the right that every Catholic has to assisting at Mass and participating in the Eucharistic liturgy according to the norms determined by the Church. How many people tell me their ceremonies they participate in are in open contradiction to what they as Catholics have a right? Am I clear? And we should insist on our rights. Another right that the people have, to hear the Word of God preached and proclaimed according, well, to the Church's teaching. What I just read, flagrant, open contradiction. In my pastor back home in Cleveland, St. Michael's, where I offered my first Mass, would come in once a week to teach us children in the 8th grade. We never forgot those classes. How many things he told us that I remember. One thing I have never forgotten. There are some people who think you cannot tell a lie in print, said the Monsignor. Those are the worst lies, those in print. In other words, we have duties, but we also have rights. Insist on those rights being observed. Then to close on page 16, the big paragraph. Trusting, therefore, in the help of divine grace, sustained by the authority of the blessed apostles, Peter and Paul, with certain knowledge in response to the wishes of the bishops of the whole world, we have collaborated with me in the collegial spirit with the supreme authority with which I am vested by means of this constitution to be valid forever in the future. I promulgate the present code as it has been set in order and revised. I command that for the future it is to have the force of law in the whole Latin Church. I entrust it to the watchful care of all those concerned in order that it may be observed. In other words, the Pope is flexing his papal muscles and expressing his authority as a Pope should. I think there are some questions. Today, Detroit Press referred to Pope John Paul II's health as poor when descending the, or describing the ceremonies to elevate 29 of the 30 bishops this morning. Have you heard anything? Yes, I've heard. Of course, he's not as strong as he was 10 years ago. But all that I've heard during my last visit to Rome, he's working all day. every day. As you know, some of the newspapers, some, maybe most of them, are very happy to have somebody else as Pope. What will be the name of the new religious order for men being formed to promote and teach the Catholic Catechism, whether they do this in a classroom or from parish to parish in the form of missions? Well, right now, they're missionaries of the Catechism of the Catholic Church. Pray, however, because so much depends on the authority of the Church. In other words, I just carry on what I'm told to do, and every step of the way, I'm trying to get clearance from ecclesiastical authority. What are we to think of crying and bleeding? Mary statues. Demonic or true outward signs or warnings which are meant to bring about a change of heart. Well, I spent 2 hours with a priest who makes statues of Our Lady weep. And he did not demonstrate to me, I didn't ask him for a demonstration, but his bishop did. And so the bishop had a nice statue of Our Lady on the desk there in the office. And so the priest came in and said, "Father, well, will you please bless this statue?" So the priest blessed the statue, began to weep, which changed the nature of the interview. So, in talking to the priest, he seems very sincere. He said, "I don't know why it happened to me." He says, "I am a C student, not very bright in the seminary. I just got through my studies. I'm not very holy, but it just happens." But he tells me that it's improved my spiritual life. I may have told some of you this. So I offered, I said, "Father, you need guidance," and he sure needs guidance. "So, tell your bishop that Father Hardy is willing to give you whatever assistance you need. Talk to the bishop and let me know." So that night he called me up, the priest called me up, and he said, Bishop said, "Thanks for your offer, but he's providing me with another priest to direct me." And what the bishop did was to put the priest pretty much in seclusion. So in other words, it's pretty hard to get to the priest. And if it's from Our Lady, if it's really supernatural, she'll find a way of getting a message across, bishop or no bishop. So many pastors seem to think we can only receive communion once a day. What can we offer them to clarify the issue? Well, I said, the best you can do is show for communion a second time, that's all. It's in canon law, couldn't be clearer. Provided the second time, remember, you are attending Mass. Some people you don't argue with, you smile at, and you reaffirm, or sometimes you enlighten. But please discuss the Holy Father's meeting with the Dalai Lama and turning over one of our Catholic shrines to him. Well, he thinks that he turned the shrine over, but from what I know of the occasion when this Oriental non-Christian prayed and on the Holy Father's invitation, Let me tell you this, and this, of course, is, I would not have the, might say, the fortitude to do this because I don't have the authority. But I do not think it is objectively contrary to the Catholic faith to encourage, say, a Buddhist or a Hindu to engage in his prayers. Now, I assume, this is my assumption, the Holy Father thought it through and honestly believed that he was doing the right thing in encouraging, without compromising Christianity, the Dalai Lama to be praying, and even publicly. So, here's what I have found through my lifetime of working with both non-Catholic and non-Christian religions. After almost 2,000 years, the majority of the non-Christian world has not accepted Christ. There can be no question of compromising our faith, or even leave the least, slightest impression that it makes no difference. Christ is Christ, and Buddha is Buddha. Christ is the living God, and Buddha, at most, was a human person. However, there was such a thing as associating with or encouraging those who do not share our religion, encouraging them to practice their religion on that side of what they believe, which is consistent with Christianity. In other words, in every religion there is a certain measure of truth. And this is what I think Holy Father has been going out of his way to do, encourage within the non-Christian religions those aspects that are consistent with Christianity. Myself, I've been teaching the non-Christian religions for 30 years. When I first began, I had to examine my conscience and pray and ask for light. What am I doing in Hinduism or Buddhism? Well, what I found, first of all, that these religions do have a great deal of truth, which I, as a believing Christian, can identify. And there's a road into their non-Christian hearts because I know more of what they stand for and can show them that they don't have the full truth. What is the meaning of our sesame turning gold from silver seeing lights, while adoring and making aberration daily? At least once a day. Before the Blessed Sacrament. Well, you, by all means, spend some time before the Blessed Sacrament every day. I can't quite make out the full question. What's the difference between occult natural powers or the devil? Well, if you use the word occult, you almost immediately imply demonic. At least in my vocabulary, the occult implies some kind of preternatural evil force. Strictly speaking, I then would not speak of occult natural. I would speak of unknown natural powers. If they are occult, in my vocabulary, they are somehow evil or demonic. I was unable to attend the last two classes to have any with you today. From the last two classes, I may have something. Joined to the Catechism of the Catholic Church. Now this is from Exploring the New Catechism. By Alfred McBride, Order of Premonstratensians. Attentions. Well, I believe this is a kind of a summary and will be, I guess, published from the Sunday Visitor. And it is drawn from this book. This is the full book of McBride. What I saw, it is quite good. I did not read the whole thing. If the bishop should tell you not to kneel for Holy Communion or not to attend a different parish with a more orthodox mass, should you obey? Well, I would say it's not a question of obedience. It may be a question of prudence. Am I clear? Because the bishop does not really have the right to command a person, order a person, say, not to kneel before communion. That's in the Church of the Law. You may kneel. As far as going to a different parish with a more orthodox mass, same thing. A person does have the liberty to attend another church. It may be a question of prudential judgment. Am I making sense? Given the factors, is it wiser for me, wiser, more prudent in the long run to say, not kneel down for communion or continue going to that parish or, well, kneel and of course then be on the wrong side of the bishop? It shows, however, how sensitive some members of the hierarchy are to certain elements that really are beyond their authority. Am I clear? As I keep telling one audience after another, pray for bishops. Pray for them. I have heard the devil will give 99 truths for one deception. Could this be true? Oh, yes. That's putting it mildly. 999 truths out of 1,000 for one deception. Oh, yeah. Years of telling the truth to finally deceive. And this is where you've got to understand the evil spirits if you're going to follow Christ faithfully. Because the evil spirit uses human beings to do his work. And the basic way that the devil uses human beings is through pride. That's St. Ignatius. So, what is your opinion of Nostradamus? That's the... Is that the so-called prophet?
Yeah.
I think it's fascinating fiction. I'd rather read Conan Doyle or Perry Mason. My husband and I would like to go somewhere and make a week-long retreat. Can you recommend a place that is within one day's driving? Oh, if the couple will show up, I will give you some ideas. One day's driving, that's pretty how fast you drive. What is your opinion of Metagogy? Well, I've said this, I'm sure, by now at least 15 times. I think God is using Metagogy in so many ways, confessions, conversions, and whatnot. Wonderful. But as far as the revelations, or alleged revelations, I do not believe they are supernatural revelations. Thanks for the question. Are the experiences at being slain in the spirit, speaking in tongues, and others in the charismatic circles, supernatural gifts of the Holy Spirit? Oh, they could be. That's the subjunctive mood. They could be. For me, it began, let's see, in 1962. So it's 32 years. My relationship with the charismatics. That chaplain from Northern Michigan with whom I lived, we shared an apartment together. He was a charismatic. About the first charismatics in the United States, Catholic charismatics, were they ever zealous. And really in these, now how many is it, I say? 32 years. I have to meet one charismatic. Have witnessed one single experience which I believed to have been supernaturally miraculous. So, however, over the years again, I found it not useful, in fact, it would be morally wrong for me to discourage people with the charismatic movement to pull out of the charismatic movement, because they can become so immersed in the movement, it can be psychologically even dangerous to pull out. I pray for them, tell them I love them, want to help them. But then if you ask me, as far as the phenomena themselves go, if there are, I'm not saying there may not be. I have in over 30 years' experience yet to meet one which I thought was miraculously supernatural. Last evening, was our 35th wedding anniversary. Our children rented a motel room for us. We ordered a pizza and spent the evening studying Latin in church history. I hope you approve. I'm going to save this one, isn't it? What is the difference between a locution and the dialogue of a normal prayer life? Well, before you put in dialogue into a normal prayer life, of course the word dialogue here is in quotation marks, but speak about dialogue. First of all, every prayer is a form of conversation with God. So, I would say objectively, in theological language, there really is no difference, I mean it, between what we call a locution and engaging in, say, meditation or mental prayer with our Lord. It's just that when it qualifies as, quotes, mystical, or it's more unusual than ordinarily. Is the Salvation Army a Christian religion or a form of a cult? They do not baptize or celebrate the Lord's Supper. Should a Christian support their work? Well, I would recommend giving your money to other worthy causes. They are a religion. No question about it. Salvation Army is a religion. And in fact, this is one of the conditions for benefiting from the Salvation Army. You get charity from them, but there's a string attached. What is the proper way to extend the kiss of peace at Mass? Touch faces, each side, grasp the elbows. Well, whenever I can, as by now you people know, I just don't have the kiss of peace. Because I found out, sometimes I have the nerve to look what the people are doing. I say to myself, Hardin, are you a partner to all of that? So, I don't tell the people to extend the kiss of peace. You never know what people are going to do. Just never know. I think a simple shaking of hands would be plenty. But this embracing, oh Lord, help us. And when the priest goes around embracing people, I read that Saint Martin de Porres was able to shrink in size before the crucifix had the same size on the corpus. Well, if it's true, that would surely be one of those phenomena, you see. And I would call it supernatural for Martin de Porres. How are we to interrupt our rosaries turning gold? Interrupt our rosaries turning gold.
Interpret.
Does somebody have a method for turning rosaries to gold?
No. Isn't it like
You mean they turn gold? Oh, amazing question. Do they really turn gold?
Yes.
They really do, eh?
Yes.
Are they really gold or they just look gold?
Yellow color.
Please?
It's yellow color.
Yellow color.
Look gold.
Well, all that I've said before about metagogy stands, and I have enough material for a good thick book on metagogy. I'd lose many friends if I published it.
What about rosaries? Other places, not at places like that.
Yeah, well. In other words, the exchange could take place. Now, I do not think it is supernaturally miraculous. Seal of confession. Can a priest reveal the contents of a confession after the death of that person? No. In the news recently was a story of a man in California confessing to a murder on his deathbed, telling where the body is buried. Supposedly the priest gave an anonymous tip to authorities where that person was buried in Michigan 10 years ago. This story just disappeared suddenly. Please comment. Well, provided he did not identify, the priest did not identify the person and the crime committed. Now, here it says, telling where the body is buried. Suppose the priest gave an anonymous tip to authorities. Well, he could do that. Could do that. Could you speak on resting in the Spirit? Resting in the Spirit. A number of meanings. An authentic meaning for, again, true mystics would be that they are in ecstasy and so wrapped in the awareness of God's presence as to be even unconscious of everything else. Twenty-five years ago, two of my sisters were invited to take part in a seance. Before it began, one sister got up and left. The other stayed. It seems that she may be physically, spiritually, emotionally scarred. What can I do for her besides pray? I worry even about her marriage. P.S. The one holding the seance was the mother of a rock star band member. Well, I presume she needs some help. And now the scarring may be psychological, or cursed also. Could be demonic. If you want to tell me more, let me tell me more, either in writing or otherwise.
Could the sacrament of healing?
Please?
Could the sacrament of healing be given to her for that?
Well, could be, but not for psychological disorders.
Okay.
In offering the sacrifice of the Mass, the priest omitted washing of the hands. When I asked him why, he answered this was optional. He's wrong. What he was taught at the seminary, he's wronger. He's in error. He's in error. And of course, seminary is in error too. If one is praying before the Blessed Sacrament, can he or she be confident that any received illumination will not be diabolical? I'd say normally, yes. It depends, of course, on what the person is thinking about, what kind of thoughts you bring. In other words, there's such a thing as tempting God. You can't expect God to work miracles and have some wild ideas on your brain and walk before the Blessed Sacrament and expect Christ to work the miracle.